are off. I told Schroen that I want Bin Laden's head. I want that motherfucker's head in a box. We must destroy Al-Qaeda. I briefed him on our initial rough plans from the night before. Much of that, indeed, was based on our previous work, particularly the efforts of Rich and his team in Alex Station. We have to go fast. We will lose men, maybe many, I warned. You can bet on it. And you know what? You keep going. You never stop for anybody or anything, you understand? Are you prepared for that? He was not really asking questions, just rhetorical declarations. I knew not to interrupt. I will give you whatever you want, or whatever we have. You focus on the war, on your men. You're going into the Valley of Death with only a handful of officers. Forget about anything else. You focus on the enemy. You kill as many as you can. I told Schroen that I wanted Bin Laden's head in a box, you get it? You wipe them out and I will take care of the politics. He ranted. I did not bother to tell him that he was repeating himself. And no bullshit code names, war banners, or celebrating anything. Keep it simple, you understand? He looked as though he were screaming, but he was not. His full face was contorted, red, and impossibly animated. He could bark, growl, snarl, and spit all at the same time. I wondered how he did that. But I never wondered about his true purpose. After working for him, I learned to listen intently. His wildly intuitive political sensory perceptions were acute. He had developed a rare mix of prudence and fearlessness. One minute he would avoid conflict, the next he would rush the ramparts. Yes, sir, I understand. He grew silent. He almost sighed. Let me know if you need anything. You bet. I left him there in his office, alone. Back in my office, I pulled out a map and studied Afghanistan. I feared AQ would strike us again, perhaps in the homeland, at any time. We had to move as fast as possible to attack the enemy, to disrupt them. That was our best defense, to move against them with great speed, but in a way that rallied as many Afghans as possible against AQ and the Taliban. We would recruit, subvert, run through and run around the Taliban to get to AQ. However, we would not be invaders. That would never work. Instead, we would be the accelerant helping to fuel an uprising. That way, we had the best chance of destroying AQ's command and control and denying them safe haven in Afghanistan. We would be insurgents, supporting Afghan insurgents, the ultimate target being AQ leadership, especially UBL. Massey came in. I gave him a truncated version of my talk with Kofor. He gave me an update. He rattled off names and assignments. Are they the right kind of people? I asked. Oh, we will have the people, but maybe not enough of the right ones. What do you mean? There are plenty of volunteers, in fact, more than we can absorb, but most don't have the right skills. We can patch together the right combinations of talent to make it work. You know, there are very few officers with all the skills required for this type of mission. Very few people anywhere, for that matter. He was right, except for one large strategic exception. Who speaks Afghan languages, understands the terrain, hates AQ, and loves to fight? The Afghans, of course. That's why this fight is about Afghan allies helping us reach our ultimate target. They know that with Massoud dead and now 9/11, this is their moment. Schroen has reported that. Abdullah Abdullah, Engineer Arif, and Amrullah have told us. We need officers, leaders, who can empower and encourage the Afghans with the right strategy, coordinated among them at the right time. They already have the incentive. We just need to help them. John nodded but did not leave. What else? I asked. The line divisions, some of them might be a problem. We have Director Tenet behind us, and so is Chief of Human Resources Rob Richer, but the line divisions will not want to give up their best people. We have COSs from all over the world, and some others, great officers, calling us. They all can't leave their posts. Take the best ones that best suit our needs. Work with Rob. Let me know if there's a big problem for anybody that we really need, and I will discuss with Kofor. Massey gave me a doubtful look. John, listen. We will get whomever we need. We will work the system, respectfully, but one time only. If the system bogs down, well, then we just grab them. John, with a hint of bemusement and anticipation in his voice, said, "Gonna piss off some people." "Well, I'm good at that." "Yes, you are." Camp David. It was late September on a Saturday morning. I rode in the black armored SUV with Director Tenet to Camp David. I had never been there, nor had I met President Bush, who had been in office only 8 months. President Bush, looking fit and relaxed in casual dress, greeted us warmly. He and Director Tenet started bantering easily, a gift that was hardwired into the director's personality. Andy Card politely queried me about my background. National Security Advisor Rice was there, radiating a quiet, protective shield around the president. Vice President Cheney gave me a good handshake and a tight, lopsided smile. This was my first time meeting any of them. They were all polite and gracious to the new guy, who had zero political weight and only an operational orientation to policy. Their acceptance of me reflected the confidence they had in Tenet. Over the years, I had demonstrated competence in intelligence operations, both collection and covert action, but this was a new universe. I had jumped across the boundary that separates operations and policy, only soon to realize there was no clear line between the two. There is a broad common ground where ops and policy overlap, and where the fuzzy boundary lines can shift. Sometimes they even evaporate. The briefing was informal, more of a discussion among the participants. With multiple maps in hand, I explained our current plan for Afghanistan. President Bush asked most of the questions. All inquired about timelines. I had no clue about how fast or slowly the war in Afghanistan would develop, except that the CIA teams were either on the ground or on the way. Speed was critical. I also explained that with better intelligence generated by the teams, we could build a more comprehensive picture. This would inform the decisions directing the covert action, the overt military strikes, and the policy. One of the CIA's best analysts, Emil Nakhle, then described the ideological impact of AQ in the Muslim world. Raised in Palestine with a PhD in political science, he was one of the foremost authorities on political Islam. I always listened carefully to his briefings. So did the president. I was surprised by the lack of DOD input into the meeting. We were getting nothing from the Pentagon regarding their plans. I wondered what Secretary Rumsfeld and others were telling the president, given that the Pentagon seemed not to have a plan. Kofor was right. We were going to war, and the CIA had the lead. After the meeting, President Bush walked George and me out to the SUV. George was a couple of paces ahead. The president briefly placed his hand on my back and quietly said, "Go get 'em." "Yes, sir." This simple gesture and comment was for me the most important and most memorable part of the meeting. The President of the United States had given me a direct, clear command in a private, personal way. It was, in some manner, unreal. That gesture was more than any operations officer could want or need or deserve. I felt privileged, humbled, and fiercely determined. I could not shake my sense of unreality about the encounter, the entire policy process, and the way the war was unfolding before us. In the vehicle, George was already chewing a mangled wet cigar. "That was good," he mumbled. "They don't have much but us, do they?" I inquired. I wondered what I was missing. Maybe there was some parallel plan at work. I still had trouble accepting that the CIA had the paramount role, that I had a leadership role. "Yep, that's right," George said. "Kofor, you, our guys?" He stared at me, raised his eyebrows, and nodded. I had traveled with the director on a long overseas trip the previous year, and I had learned to understand his many expressions. This one said, "Don't be a putz. We are it. Get it done." His cigar was almost in pieces, but somehow stayed together. Must be all the saliva, I figured. "Yes, sir," I said. But I was